and welcome to Bagel Tech Big, the weekend show from the Bagel Tech Network, which is firmly placed at the weekend, as it should be. We're here for another week on Friday, talking about the week in technology, and I'm joined by the fantastic panel as normal. Five of us, brand new Skype wall. Happy New Year, happy new Bagel Tech. Oh, I'm at the other end of the office, that's why it looks bigger, honest. Top left, James Hart, how you doing, mate? Happy New Year, man.
And happy New Year to you. Yes, I'm recovered from my cold generally, so I'm doing much better, thank you very much. No Lemsips today, which is always a good sign.
You were worried about dribbling snot on Eric earlier.
It was pretty nasty, yeah. Poor Eric, I would have apologised, but we're doing okay. I just don't want to spill my beer on you.
No, they can probably cope with that. He's only got orange juice.
I have to get a poncho out, big tarp, just to hold over my head here.
Next to him, it's Steve. Why do I need a chair neighbour?
Oh,
hello, Mead boy.
Happy New Year to everyone.
Hello, Mead boy. How are you doing?
Excellent, excellent. No, I'm really good. Have a great week back at work. It's lovely to be back at work, isn't it? That first day back, everyone really enjoys it.
Now, That was 2 weeks ago, dude. And what your escapade?
What escapade?
Exactly.
Okay.
With the Mead, and I want to know. You probably still wouldn't pass a breath test, would you? Oh, he nearly spat water on his MacBook Pro.
He did, spit water out at the computer. No, the Mead was excellent.
It
was
no kidding, dude.
What?
No kidding.
Very Moorish.
Have you listened back ridiculous. To that show yet, Steve?
If it's okay with you and at the Bagel Tech Bash, I might be able to get a barrel down there, which we can open after the podcasting.
You think?
Yeah, after the podcasting.
Have you got? Have you got the
more professional way to be?
Have you got the feed open, Steve? By any chance?
No.
Oh, well, that's a shame because you're not going to see this, which is actually you talking profoundly about your pick of the week. And when Isla Sinclair asked you if Tazepam was put in your mead, you promptly fell off the chair, dude. Sarah's right. Losing it a bit. There we go. So if you haven't got the video, I do apologise for this. But there we go. Ready, Steve. Ready. Oh, not quite. Here he goes. Oh, there we go. Steve's gone off and pulled the cable out of the headphones. Bad luck, mate. That was you.
Ding.
That was a proud moment.
Watch it on YouTube. What viewer, listener, it's worth another look.
Yeah, I just want you to know that if we still know each other when your daughters hit 18 or 21 and you have a party and you show a picture of them bare-assed, I'm going to pull that video out and show it to everyone else as well.
Deal.
Just so that they can get their own back. They'll have that just in the background so that they can say, Dad, don't show that video or else.
Hey, Deal. I've only met you lot guys this week or this year. I've had a great year. And I was just... You know, celebrating the Christmas spirit and that mead was blinking strong. So, no, thanks for letting me come on. I've had a great year and I won't do that again.
You're normally really careful about what you post because of work and things like that.
Yep.
Online.
Yep.
Dude, we've had over 4,000 views of that.
There is a guy in work, actually, who listens to the network, and I just mentioned to him, and I don't think he actually watched that episode, so I was like, phew, that was quite
good. If you send me his email, I'll make sure he gets it.
No.
Beneath Mead Boy is Sarah Jane. How you doing, Mrs.?
I'm doing fine. How on earth do I follow that?
Well, you didn't. You were part of it. I mean, you were crying during that. So
I was. I did nearly lose it as much. I think I nearly just as much likely of falling off of my chair as Steve did, definitely falling off his.
You would have sprayed some wine. Paul in the chat room says he'd give 250 quid for that clip, gladly. There we go. And Eric, how's life?
Hey, guys.
How's life in the sunny side?
Good. It's nice and sunny today.
Mm.
Ow.
I hate
actually,
you.
Show your reverse shot.
It was sunny in London today. It was sunny in London today. It was absolutely bloody crap the rest of the week, but today we got a bit of sunshine.
Yeah, it's not just the sun, it's the warmth we want as well.
And the dulcet tones that you can hear are from the G-Man, Alex G. Fox. How you doing, mate? I've got a lower third that's wrong. Sorry, pal. I'll fix that. Hang on.
G-Man Fox?
Yeah, G-Man
Fox. Oh, there you go. I'll be Dr. Happy Man. I can't be Dr. Happy Man, can I? I know far too much.
It did say G-Man Fox earlier.
It did, yeah.
I think it would be a lot more fun to change it to something interesting like Alex G. String Fox.
Hey? Ooh, Sarah, I'm glad you broke up during that.
Alex G-String Fox.
Yeah, I know. I did.
I explained it so the listener could understand her.
I shall get it fixed as soon as I possibly can. Hang on, Alex.
I'm quite happy to. Oh, it's going to get worse. I've got the feeling.
No. It's going to get better. The week in technology. What's happened this week? IE6 has finally died a death. And Internet Explorer is not doing particularly well. It seems it's dying a death in comparison to the total browser market. The Nintendo 3DS crossed 4 million sales in the US, which I've got to say, I looked at that and thought, that's like a week in iPad. So that doesn't seem particularly good. A Chicago cabbie is well ahead of the market. He's got 2,500 followers, and if you send him a tweet, he'll come pick you up and take you wherever you want to go. And he sends out deals. You could have had a $5 off this week on a trip to Chicago Airport. Nokia may be bought by Microsoft. I'm not sure whether that's a good purchase or not. We'll have a chat in a minute. And we'll also talk about CES, because that's coming up next week. And there's a whole pile of stuff already been released in the photo market, which Alex and I have talked about with the guys on the photo show. But we'll have a chat about what's coming up in CES. And the big story to start us off is that here in the UK, Comet is an electrical retailer, and they're being sued by Microsoft for making 94,000, not a couple, 94,000 recovery CDs or DVDs.
I made them some more if they need them.
You've got a few extra. I mean,
that's it. Lawsuit heading down your way.
Before we start the rights and wrongs of this as far as the UK market's concerned, I was quite interested because I'd sent the story to Eric to have a look at because, you know, he wouldn't know who Comet was. But, I mean, this kind of thing has... It's a universal problem. You know, the PC market has given you a PC and said, do you want to make a recovery disc? And if you say no, that's it. There's no further options. And that's a universal issue, I would have thought, Eric, yeah?
I guess. I guess I just haven't bought a Windows pre-installed PC in long enough to have seen this option. So, because I remember before it used to be that the danger was if you erased that little partition on your hard drive, you'd have no ability to restore Windows. So apparently since Vista, they've had a way that you can burn your own DVD.
Yeah, but you have to do it. Literally, when you switch the machine on, you get an option to do it then. And if you don't take that option... That's
I
it.
I dispute that. Oh, wow. Certainly on my Acer netbook that I bought a couple of months ago, I can do it any time I want.
Well, the thing about netbooks, though, is that they don't have CD-ROMs, therefore there's no optical way of doing it. It's for PCs that have optical drives that don't have the recovery partition, I think.
All right, okay.
Or floppy disk drives.
That's weird. It seems, you know, my interpretation is it seems a little bit, you know, shady on both sides. That's wrong of Microsoft to give you one chance and one chance only to make a recovery disc. I'm surprised to hear that.
Well this is the question that starts it off, though, Eric. I'm not sure whether it is the manufacturer or Microsoft. If it's the OEM's issue, then... But, I mean, a lot of the spit that's flying out the frying pan here is the fact that Comet is saying that Microsoft is at issue for its recovery policy.
Yeah. And I think it's going to test that. Certainly in the UK, it's going to test that. If Comet win this case, it could have interesting ramifications in the UK.
What's interesting, though, is that the software is on the CD, is on the DVD, but the license code isn't. So it's actually just...
Do you know that, James?
It's not much use to any... Oh, but no. But if it's duplicated, if it's a duplicated disc, the likelihood of it not being activated, of it being... activatable in its current state is probably minimal. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I must admit,
they're not going to be getting the TechNet discs out and making a copy of them.
No. But I didn't know whether because when I originally read this story, I thought of Comet actually gone off, taken one of the discs and just duplicated it with the same license. And I thought otherwise Microsoft aren't going to have a case. If there's no license on that disc, they're not actually doing anything illegal other than providing them a way of recovering the disc. If they've still got a key in their license key for their version of Windows, which is on the label on the bottom of their laptop or whatever, I can't actually see what the problem is because all they're doing is actually creating the recovery disc which the user is going to do anyway.
Well, you say they're not breaking the law, but actually there are rules about duplication of this disc is strictly prohibited. There's also potentially manufacturers use their own version of the recovery disc. I know Dell have their own recovery disc, Toshiba have their own. So depending on the manufacturer, it's licensed to them, I think. So it's kind of the legal obligation, the legal issue is that they are duplicating a disk which they are not allowed to duplicate.
But
I don't think it is that the disk is usable in any other way, because otherwise you'd find a flood of ISO images on the internet.
Yeah, if there is no license information on that disk, then how on earth are Microsoft ever going to prove that it's a copy of the same disk over and over again?
I've got a Windows 7 Home Premium disk here that hasn't got the license on it. It comes on a little sticker.
Yeah, but
it still says you are not allowed to make copies of this disk.
No, I know. But if Microsoft, if Comet have actually produced a disk which has got nothing identifiable on it, and a recovery disk normally, from what I understand, actually has that information embedded in it, so that the user doesn't have to key that in every time. I stand to be corrected there, but.
I don't think that's the case. If there's
some form of license on it, and I know because of the, I've forgotten the name of the file, it's a setup.ini file. There's a file in there which restricts the type of license ID you can key in, because you can't, most of the time, you can't just take any old Windows disk and use any license key with it. It's restricted within groups, because I know, because I've tried to do this in the past when I've lost the disk. No, perfectly legitimate. I've not done anything wrong. And I've found out, certainly on XP, and I imagine it's even stronger on Windows 7, that you actually have to have certain files on the disk, which then restrict it to a certain group.
Right, that beggars a question.
Go on.
Right, you're saying that you have one option. I mean, I do know. I mean, I've bought some cheap laptops for the kids in the past, and, you know, you turn it on, and it says, do you want to make a backup DVD of the software on this machine now? And if you press no, you end up sending some company about 50 quid for a copy of a disk that they should have really provided in the box in the first place. But what happens if you, for instance, use something like Norton Ghost and you ghost your hard drive as a backup for your initial boot up? Who owns the copyright on that? Because that doesn't seem particularly different to what you're talking about Comet have done.
Apart from the fact they're not allowed to do it.
Go ahead, Eric.
All right, here's the weird thing, right? Microsoft is claiming that this is counterfeiting software. That's their actual quote.
Yeah, counterfeit's the word that's used, yeah.
Yeah, and although it is illegal, because Microsoft technically owns that copyright and they can choose to manage the right to make such copies, that's what the copyright means. They can say, we don't want you doing that, so they're not allowed to. However, while it is illegal and violates copyright, it is not, in fact, promoting piracy, because they've actually already sold these customers a legitimate copy of Windows.
Exactly.
The disk itself can be made freely by them, or Microsoft even admits that normally the disk could be given away freely by the manufacturer or for a small amount if the customer calls them up, or they can make it themselves for just the cost of a burnable DVD themselves. Where it gets a little bit shady as well from both sides is that, first of all, Microsoft acknowledges that the disks were largely unnecessary and therefore were not actual piracy, but then they go on to call it counterfeiting, and I think they're suing them, right? So that's a little bit shady. But on the other side, I found out they were actually selling these for £14 a piece, which I'm guessing is about 15 or 20 bucks. And to sell something for that price that could be made freely by the customer seems to be exploiting ignorant users that don't know that they can make it for free themselves.
How do you know that they didn't restrict that to only people that actually they could prove that have bought a laptop or a PC through Comet?
I'm still not entirely sure they're allowed to sell it, strictly speaking.
Well, selling something that doesn't belong to them.
I don't think they're allowed to do any part of that. But the problem is, they're, you know, if you can pirate your friend's Windows 7 install disk, but unless you have a product key that you bought from Microsoft or are a really good hacker and know how to do that so that they will never catch you, you've got a problem to deal with. You need some kind of a product key, and that's where the purchase comes in.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was saying about the license key on the disk. If there's nothing on there, there's no way they could prove where they copied that disk from.
Apart from the fact it's a copied disk, it is a copy of a disk. That is the fact. It is a copy of it.
Yeah, but the fact that
they're in Comet stores, it's not the fact that the users have got them. It's the fact that Comet have them in their stock room and are selling them.
But if you take if you take it on a strictly legal term, what's the difference between Comet doing what they've done, assuming that they've copied disks that haven't got license IDs on, and what Dell and all the other PC manufacturers do, where they take a master disk and install that version on a on a particular disc, on a particular PC, and then add a license to it. What's the difference between that?
I think there are two differences. The first difference is that Dell have probably got agreement from Microsoft to do it.
Right,
and the second difference is I don't think Dell is selling it.
Steve,
yeah, selling
Steve,
aspect makes it difficult.
Hang on a sec. Steve, you had a point there. Go on.
Yeah, I was just going to pretend to be my mum again. My mum.
You want to talk about cards?
No.
Or candles?
No. So my mum's gone to Comet. She's bought one of these discs. She's read in the newspaper that she's concerned about this counterfeiting, etc. She therefore goes to the Microsoft website that is recommended for this story, which is called How to Tell, Learn, Verify, and Buy with Confidence. I've put the link in the chat room. And it says how to tell if you're properly licensed. And there are three areas that they tell you to look at. Confusing an upgrade with a full license. This doesn't count for that because it's a recovery disc. Using volume licenses to install a professional edition of a home edition. This doesn't count as that. Unintentional purpose of counterfeited software. This is a recovery disc. It's not. It doesn't fall into that area either. So even on the Microsoft's own page, it doesn't say that a recovery disc is counterfeit.
They don't even offer a type of piracy that this could be. I love that.
Not yet.
It's not even in the books way. Yet.
Well, I think let's go back to the point that was originally made by James, in that there is a point that says this is a disc which is controlled by us. You aren't allowed to make a copy of it. That's the end user license agreement or the copyright status of the disc. So anything that you do is technically therefore in breach of that. No one's disagreeing that there's a breach of copyright in the statement of the EULA that's on the disc. But my view of this is, I can just see in my mind this discussion that's gone in the Comet boardroom, which is people saying, look, we're getting customers coming back all the time. They've got one chance to make a recovery disc. They're saying, I can't get this to work. What am I supposed to do? And they are spending an absolute fortune in staff time sitting trying to solve a problem that could be easily resolved if the computer manufacturers would put a recovery disc in like they always bloody did that cost pennies to make, and they aren't doing it. So they've made a very sensible financial-based decision of the fact that actually, even if Microsoft sue us, the amount that they're going to sue us for is probably going to be less than the amount that we pay in staff costs sorting out all the crap that comes from the fact that we've got a completely unusable recovery disc program system.
Yeah.
And that's the key part.
I think that's why they did it.
The recovery programs, the recovery disc system is utterly broken.
Especially since Comet actually make a lot of money out of these extra sales anyway. They do. They sell warranty. They push the warranties. They push these extra products. And they probably are very, very good at it.
Let's face it, guys. The only reason why this is an issue is because Microsoft think we're all pirates.
Wow.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they would all give us a fresh
I can't see Microsoft emerging from this with a single sparkle on them. They are going to come out of this looking like dirty whores.
Yeah, because even if it's going to be on a technicality, isn't it?
Mm. It's not going to take them down one additional peg, I promise you. No one is going to think. I mean, people see this and they go, well, of course, that's Microsoft. What would you expect them to do in response to this? But I think it's
they're dirty hairs to start with.
Yeah, it really is splitting hairs in a weird way. It's like, yes, it's illegal. Yes, they're exercising their rights to restrict distribution of copyrighted material, but it's locked and it's not actually a product they're selling. It's like it'd be like if AOL sued people back in the day for selling those AOL CDs you get free in the mail. that's not the product. You still have to, the CD is just free, is already free. You have to sign up for AOL and give them money in a different way, just like you have to buy a product key.
Yeah, but
just one thing.
They're selling it. What it's not, though, is a product.
Right.
Because it cannot function by itself.
I think the one difference, though, may be that, do we know, I think I've heard that Microsoft gets more money from OEMs, PC manufacturers, if they want to supply an actual disc or Microsoft gets more money from the OEMs to make the customer's life easier, to let them restore, to give them a partition or a disc that is, non-volatile.
Heard that they actually incentivize the manufacturers not to give a disc because they think we're all pirates and that we're going to pirate it if they give us a disc.
If I was Microsoft, I would let this story die. Because otherwise,
you wouldn't have started it.
Well, I would be embarrassed that I've only sold 94,000 copies of this recovery disc in 14 months since the thing has been available. That's 6,000 a month.
Can I disagree completely? The reason I disagree, and I think Microsoft actually might have a point, is because of Comet is a retailer. Okay, we know that. I'm sure Eric has picked up on the fact that they don't actually make anything. And what the problem is, you've got all these other people that do it, but the recovery discs and all the rest of it, it's the manufacturers, the people actually make the machines, and it's their decision whether to put a recovery disc in, or it's their decision whether not to. And, you know, it eventually it goes back to them if it's a problem. But Comet don't actually make anything to do with these machines. They're only a retailer. So in that respect, I'd say Microsoft is completely within their rights to say, you know, it's like the guy in the market store, because that's all they are. They have no right whatsoever to any part of this software. They're not the OEM license. They didn't buy, they have not bought a single thing from Microsoft. They bought that computer from Dell or whoever, many other manufacturers, no manufacturer at all, you know, any individual. They have no license whatsoever with Microsoft.
I think you've argued the point. Sorry, go on.
Carry on.
Go ahead, Sarah.
I was going to say, Alex, I must admit, this was occurring to me just now when I read it, but it did actually say that Comet are actually a Microsoft reseller. So that may be how they're actually legally getting away with it, because obviously,
well, they're a reseller.
As you say, it's just the PC, then they don't have a contract directly with Microsoft for Microsoft to be able to sue them.
Yeah, but they're a reseller,
just means only
just
because
means
they sell software.
It probably just means they're licensed to sell boxed copies of Windows
exactly
operating
my point.
Systems.
Yeah. But those machines that they're selling, they have got no license whatsoever with Microsoft in selling those machines. Their license is
with
the manufacturer.
Windows license that's on them.
I think you've argued the point done, right? Because just from what you've said, that it's a Best Buy, it's like Best Buy in the United States, so I'll assume it's like that. You know, Best Buy has their Geek Squad. They have a little desk, a help desk that you can pay for assistance. And one of the assistance they provide is setting up your computer when you first get it. Mm. So for $15, is it 15 or 20 bucks? What does 15 pounds convert to roughly?
$25.
Oh, 25. Wow. So see, that seems extortionary. That seems like they're preying on ignorant users who didn't know that for the price of a $1 DVD-R, they could make that themselves. And if they really wanted to make this perfectly legal and maybe even charge even more money for this service, they should set it up as a service where they say, yeah, you buy your computer over here, then you get into this line, the Geek Squad line or whatever their equivalent is, and that person there walks you through burning your own disk for you in a way that's perfectly legal. The person's there or however, whatever loophole they could find, but that way they wouldn't actually be selling a copy that they duplicated and made.
See, I mean,
yeah, but they don't make any money out of that, and I think they do want to maximize their profits. And my point I was going to make was Alex argued the principle really well. What Comet have done is they've sat down in the boardroom, as I think it was Sarah said earlier, and said, right, what are we going to do? I know we can make a quick buck like this, and if Microsoft sue us, we'll roll with the punches, because they had the potential, and as I think Steve said, they've squandered it to actually make a good slice of money out of this. They want the money. They're not interested in the customers, really, apart from the whinging ones who want to come back to what there is of a Geek Squad, which there isn't.
I think you've got to be careful, though, because, I mean, some years back, before I got my mother onto Mac for the pure tech support angle, the problem I had... Who the hell's calling me? No? Sorry, Missy. Not right now, mate. Love you to bits, but not right now. The real problem,
not enough screens.
Yeah, the real problem that you've got is, I mean, my parents bought a machine, a very, very cheap, very, very basic Windows machine, and they said, "Would you come and set it up?" And I came and set it up for my mum and dad. And literally, the recovery process is one question, and if you click no, it buggers off. It doesn't say, "Are you sure?" Because this is your last chance. It just buggers off, and that's it. It is a fraction. The one instance that I've had where I've seen this come past, it comes back lightningly quickly.
And here's why this is monstrously stupid from a consumer-facing side. There's no way that that Microsoft's recovery process, starting with XP in Office when they first did the product key activation, and even up till now where it's what it's evolved to slowly, there's no way that benefits customers not to have a DVD, a disc, something that they can reinstall. Because if you're I can't imagine that helps one iota to stop piracy, because someone who is advanced enough to be able to crack
this has
a
got
Windows
nothing
7,
to do with piracy.
Right. Well, because someone who has, well, because someone here, someone, one of you guys just a second ago mentioned that Microsoft, I'd said that I think that they get more money from OEMs to provide a disk to the customers. And then someone said, well, I think it's also to prevent piracy. I've heard that argument too. So I'm saying, yeah, I think that's accurate. They did at one point believe that, and they may still, but it's stupid, because if you're advanced enough to be able to spoof or pirate or generate a Windows 7 license key that Microsoft will never catch through activation, and you can just keep outrunning that process, then you can download an ISO image of the same Windows distribution that is probably exists hundreds of billions of times around the planet. So you're not, it's just as easy for those people to obtain the disk as it is to burn it themselves.
I think one of the problems is that, you know, there's a point made in the chat room that PC manufacturers are cheapskates, and there is an issue there because it is such a competitive market that you're talking about generating actually reasonably decent PCs, even at £400, you know, $600, will get you a very, very good spec PC. And as a result, the costs have got to be cut somewhere, and the costs are being cut by the fact that they won't spend money paying someone to produce a basic recovery CD for a computer that you've then got to use, and it's saving a buck here and a buck there, but it's making a difference between profit and loss on the sale of a crap machine. Whereas you look at Apple, and Apple is selling you a very, very expensive machine, vastly overpriced for the hardware that it actually sells, but you've got an amazing support mechanism behind it. The Genius Bar is fantastic. Yeah. And as everyone's saying...
And you can quite easily burn the OS CDs. I mean...
Yes.
Well, no, you can, but the point is, if you look in you know, there's comments being made in the chat room here, if you buy a Lion computer, providing you've got an internet connection, you can recover any Lion computer from anywhere as long as it's got an internet connection. And Microsoft is a decade behind that.
Okay.
I saw someone's article over the weekend saying, or over Christmas, I think, saying that they tried to upgrade their family to Windows 7 Professional, and the service was just down for like the whole weekend, and it didn't say why, the whole upgrade system was down. We all know their activation system has been down before. They have false positives. And what does this really do for consumers? I mean, what possible good
that's exactly
could come of asking a person one time only if you want a recoverable DVD to save your computer when it eventually craps out on you? And if they say no, they never get it. What is the benefit to anyone for never offering them that chance again?
Okay.
I'm amazed if no one else is doing this. I can't believe it's only Comet that are making such a profit off this simple little trick.
because
they industrialized it, I think.
Maybe because the others are sticking to the law. That just does say one thing about, I mean, it's a very British-centric point, but there may actually be a place in the marketplace for a computer store / electronics retailer that deals with PCs to actually go out their way and have a good Genius-type bar system.
It's hard to do because, when you've got lots of different brands coming in.
Well, you say lots of different brands, but the vast majority of problems with PCs is software. I mean, if it's hardware, then it tends to be sent to the manufacturer, or most of these companies can cover hardware. They take 6 months to do it and charge you a fortune, but they can cover hardware. It's the software where you've got a problem. So
I think
no particular company, but if you buy a PC, or sorry, just if I can finish, if you buy a laptop, for instance, from a good computer store, and you say, okay, for look, you know, it's £350, I don't know. For an extra £10, we're going to take you through the setup. We're going to make sure you've got all your backup disks, you've got all this, that, and the other. You will leave here with the disks you need to back up, this, that, and the other, or you can pay £400 for this machine and walk out with, we'll have the disk already prepared, but you'll pay an extra money for that service from Microsoft, whoever. If someone actually came along with the, if you like, the Apple standard of sales for PCs as we come to expect from Apple, and let's face it, people are buying Apple products left, right, and center, and not because they are, I mean, they are somewhat superior, but not just because of that, because of you are paying for peace of mind, you are paying for a service, and I think there's no PC retailer in this country that offers anywhere near the service. And if they did, I reckon a big percentage of Steve Neighbor's mother type people would say, you know what, that might be £20-30 more, but they are going to make sure I leave that shop with my disc and this, and they're going to explain it all to me.
Alex,
can I just
say something, please?
Yeah, I ran, sorry.
Alex, hold on. How does that differ given that they're selling that disc, how does that differ from what Comet have done?
Because you can do it legally.
Why? If Microsoft is saying you can't do it, then if they're actually selling that disc, how does that make any difference?
No, when you buy the machine, you take it to the desk and some nice gentleman or lady says to you, okay, Mrs. Neighbour, you've bought this machine. Now, there is an issue. You do need to make your own backup disc. If you've got half an hour and you're quite willing to pay the extra £20 for whatever it is, the time or whatever, we, as a service, we are going to walk you through starting up your machine in our shop with you, and we will help you burn off that disc.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
Right. And that's what I was saying too.
Because we don't get any service in this country.
I was going to say, the point I was going to try and make was that there seems to be a denial about the need to reinstall Windows. That's the simple thing. Everybody needs to reinstall Windows after about 18 months because it just grinds to a halt and becomes crap.
Here's the perfect opening then for this funny thing that I read. So this was in the telegraph.co.uk article that I think Ewan sent me earlier this morning about, so I could catch up on the story. And it said, in the Telegraph's article, let's see, let me have the quote. They have a... they describe it and then they say what a recovery disk is. You can restore a computer if you have a problem, whether with new updates. And they say at the time of the alleged offense, the problem was more severe as fewer people stored their files and media online. And I think, you know, I'm all for journalistic context, but do they really have to remind us what life was like in 2008?
Well, what the hell's that got to do with an OS?
I know. Yeah. And the sentence before it makes no sense either. It says that recovery disks have, quote, become increasingly important as people rely on information technology.
So all we've really established,
doesn't know what he's talking about.
All we've really established in the last 30 minutes is that Microsoft are a bunch of bastards and the Telegraph write crap articles. There we go.
And I think both of those were true before we started.
That's true. We've not put the world to rights at all.
Can I just say one final point on this?
You go, Sarah.
If Microsoft don't think we're pirates, how come they don't offer that as an option along the lines of what Alex was saying? As in, you can go online
and buy a Windows disk
if you've got a license key.
Yeah.
Well, I've got Jolly Roger outside my house.
I noticed that Minecraft have recently, they've got a pirate as a language option on their software now.
Jolly good. And with 5 Mac users on the panel, with 1 Ubuntu user on the panel, that was a really pointless discussion, wasn't it?
Actually, we got 2.
Yeah, but I got to shout.
I've got everything. I've got Ubuntu, I've got Macs, I've got PCs, I've even got a ZX81.
And you've got a router that works this week. Well done, James.
Yeah, well done, Draytech. They came in another rummage.
Absolutely.
Your favourite bit for that last half an hour was when Sarah dropped out, wasn't it, James? When her reception got a bit dodgy, you were like, yeah, it's not me.
It's not just me.
You know what I said, Steve? I thought to myself, oh, is it me? And then Ewan said, oh, Sarah, you dropped out. I thought, yes, have some.
Ewan's recovery desk. I'll burn one for you right now. Just $25. Going once, going twice.
Me!
I'll say,
slap Eric with a lawsuit. Illegal copyright.
Slap him with a kipper.
and Steve's offering chocolate buttons.
Yep.
Oh, yes,
chocolate
please. They've been in the fridge.
Is that a new OS? Is that what's currently running on the playbook?
That's the new Android operating system.
I was going to say, that's going to be the next version of either Android or the next version of Ubuntu.
Just very quickly, I'm sorry to digress very briefly. I saw a playbook on New Year's Eve. One of the guests of the New Year's Eve party had brought a playbook with them. And I said, where'd you get that? And I said, they were giving them away.
Yeah, well, they've dropped to £169 here now, $299, haven't they?
They've got a BlackBerry, and because they've got a BlackBerry, they said, why don't you have a playbook as well?
Because it doesn't do email.
Exactly.
They've got BlackBerry for that.
Nokia.
Looks nicer.
Might end up being bought by Microsoft, providing, what's his name, Elon?
As long as they don't make backup discs.
Buggers off. I looked at this story today, and I kind of sat and thought, I know they've climbed into bed with Nokia, but I'm not entirely sure whether it makes any sense for Microsoft to buy Nokia. I mean,
I saw this story and just thought, this guy's just got to be in his bonnet about it happening. Don't see any more like it than that.
Go ahead,
I think it's more likely that they would buy RIM, because right now the rumors, I would say the rumors have been equally hot about either Microsoft buying RIM or Nokia. I don't see them buying both.
But really they have bad results.
I think Nokia can stand alone by itself a lot more easily than RIM could, and I think RIM is stronger with the software side in a way that Microsoft would need or want to integrate to their existing business more than they would want to integrate Nokia's worldwide hardware system.
I think there's a good point in that. Just sorry, Steve. There's a good point in that because there was a great post written by Ian Grant, one of the guys who regularly comes on the big show. It's posted on the BagelTech blog. But if you look at there, he's saying, you know, there is the BlackBerry are effectively cocking up the consumer market, but they aren't cocking up the business market. And the business market is hugely strong for them. There is a very powerful business there. And they're talking about removing Belzili and Lazaridis today as well. But I, you know, they've got them into the position that they're in, and I don't think they're failing. I think they're failing from a media viewpoint more than a business viewpoint per se. Steve, you're about to say sorry, mate.
I've not heard that Microsoft and a RIM opportunity before. Business wise, that makes sense. You can't do anything in my big corporate outside IT that doesn't involve Microsoft or BlackBerry. Put the two together and. I can't see there's anyone else going to get into my corporate in the next few years.
Same here, actually.
It's a huge market. Absolutely.
But the thing is, Nokia aren't completely dead in the water. They could go over to Android. They could just reinvent themselves as, you know, you've got, you know, companies like LG. You've got people that Samsung, they make nice handsets. Well, so do Nokia. Nokia just have to stop banging themselves against
mistakes.
The bricks.
You've got to
say. Yeah, but they've got. Sorry.
You've got to say, though, if there's a social disease for networks, Nokia's got it. They've had Mego, they've had Symbian, they've had, you know, they've passed themselves around. They're not clean.
No.
And if you think about it from Microsoft's point of view, why on earth would they buy someone like Nokia? As Eric said, you know, I think RIM fits the bill a lot better.
Yeah, they can make a phone, call it Kin. That would be a real success.
Well, yeah, but where's their phones at the moment? Where are their phones at the moment?
Well, look, Microsoft, the only reason Microsoft could want to buy Nokia is because of they're actually in a strange belief that their Windows operating system for phones is worthwhile. Because there's no point in buying RIM and then sticking Windows phone software on it. It's a waste of time. You know, it's no longer BlackBerry, and which is the only reason you want to buy BlackBerry. It's not the hardware; it's the encoding on the software you need. So there's no point whatsoever. But if they really believe that their Windows phone software works, then buy someone that does. After all, know how to make phones. You've got to remember the whole world. I mean, I don't know what the figures are, but I still reckon the majority of the world still buy more Nokias than anything else. It's not just America and it's not just Europe. Mm. You know, you've got everywhere else in the world. I mean, I still think in Japan and China, I still think Nokia are the number one.
That was the case. But if talking to Kyle now in the Philippines, if you look at the Philippines, he's saying the world is Apple. Everyone just wants an Apple logo. No one gives a toss to particularly whether it's kosher or not. They're quite happy.
They just want to walk around
with that logo on.
But you're still thinking, like, I don't know, the Middle East. It's still a hell of a... I mean, say there's, 7 billion people on the planet. Still 4 billion of them are more likely to buy Nokia than an iPhone. It's not a dead market. It's just a market that needs a little bit of reviving. And if they can build up their strategy in these other countries, then possibly they can then start bringing it back into Europe and America. But it's not a dead company at all.
Well, their big success currently, I mean, their big market share comes primarily from non-smartphones, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think the question is how many legs does that have? How much more life do the non-smartphones have?
What's the potential conversion rate there that Microsoft might be able to make some
benefit
from?
What I would say, right, okay, if you take it one step further, if it's a non-smartphone and that's where they're making their money, in the parts of the world where they're still selling non-smartphones, the infrastructure in them parts of the world would never be able to, in a million years, cope with anything that Apple or any of these very fast, clever smartphones would be able to do. Their infrastructure
is
not there.
That's true, yeah.
That's so the big issue, because many places in Central Africa use text messages incredibly heavily because they're short they're snappy, and they get the job done. They don't need any more than that. They can't use any more than that.
I mean,
as their infrastructure improves, Nokia partnered with Microsoft, whoever, can move the infrastructure forward a little bit and have a semi-smartphone. You're not going to get Apple bringing out something that's a pile of crap so it works in all these other countries. So you've still got at least 50% of the planet.
I think a question then may be, Nokia is supposedly a strong brand. It's supposedly a brand that means a lot to business, and it's a trustworthy brand. It's not like the little, no-name Chinese phones that are made for pennies and sold on a blanket, on a street. So can Nokia compete with those in the race to the bottom for the low-income markets, the places that have poor networks, that have poor people who can't afford the smartphones? I mean, yes, Apple will probably never really compete with the penny phones, because they just simply, Apple sets their price and they just don't make anything below that price. They are a premium company, like BMW is a premium car company. They will never make a, $20,000 little car. And that's just Apple's line
except
in the sand.
Mini.
Right. So what do you think? I mean, does Nokia, if they're trying to be the brand of business and the big trustworthy brand for Windows Phone and the big iconic run your business on Nokia, but their only business comes from this little penny phone sale, can they go in either of those directions successfully?
Well, I wouldn't say that's their market. They are the premium phone for everywhere that also has the penny phone market.
I'm not so sure about that, Alex. I mean, I think one of the things that we regularly make a comment on all of the podcasts is the fact that we aren't the barometer of society. The barometer of society is the people that we go and see when we go out in public, the riffraff. And when I go down the rugby club, I see that as my social barometer. Those are the people that are kind of in my peer group.
Get Steve's mum on.
Well, no, Steve's mum's far more affluent than I am. but I look at what, when it comes game time and we're finished and we're all in the bar having a beer afterwards, I look at the phones that come out of people's pockets, and there's 40% iPhone, there's 10% Galaxy S2 at the moment. That's pretty popular down there. And then everyone else is pulling out everything from a 3310 up to the equivalent current 3310, big button, Tesco, pay-as-you-go phone. No one's pulling out Nokias from what I see. No one.
We're a country of 60 million in 7 billion. You're talking about your peers, but we're not talking about, we're not.
Well, when I say that, I mean, if you look at my rugby club, we've got a great cross spectrum. We've got a lot of students. We've got a lot of young kids who have got phones that their parents have given them. BlackBerry far outseeds Nokia in terms of what kids are carrying around because of BBM. And also the people that are pulling out business phones are pulling out BlackBerries more than they're pulling out iPhones.
Right. Yeah, but I'm saying you're still thinking about, Europe and America as the market. As a world market, it might be 50% of the entire world market, even though it's only 20% of the world's population. But it's still a hell of a big market that's to be tapped by someone that makes a reasonable semi-smartphone.
Yeah. If I was on a board, I'd vote with Alex at this point, because I think there is a bigger market to actually gain at this point on the cheaper side of the market than competing with the Apples and the Androids. I think that it's in the chat room, a 3210, I think, was the best. It is still the best phone in the world. It works. It lasts a whole week. If you can get that market good, a proper phone, just a normal phone, then at least you've got a market as opposed to competing with the big boys.
Comments from the chat.
My point would be that that in the next 10 years, who knows how the political landscape will change, because many of the African states and the huge amount of the world, and China as well, has incredibly poor people. If those poor people stop being poor, if the government start investing in business, if people become more, if the world becomes more capitalist, that they will be edged out. And we don't know how that landscape's going to change. But I have a funny feeling it probably will. If you look at what's happened with the Arab Spring, if that spreads south, we could end up having better infrastructure around the world.
A couple of points in the chat room here. Tech Ag saying 70% iPhones in his peer group. Tone saying HTC, and I can't say the rest. FTW. Dirty Boxer saying, where do I hang out? It sounds awful. Well, 21st of January, mate. You can come and watch me play at that rugby club if you want. And have a beer. You'd be more than welcome.
Can I make one final point?
Yeah, hang on a sec. I was just finishing off. And corporates love the Backbreeze, says Paul. And your final point, Alex?
Just to go back on the last sentence James said about the Arab Spring. Now, the Arab Spring and all these things were done, and everyone says they were done by a mobile phone. But I bet they were done on Nokias and they weren't done on iPhones.
Well, that says nothing for the future, though.
No, but it's got to start somewhere. We're not saying to Nokia that they've got to start making smartphones now. What I had said originally is take this level of what they're doing now and slowly build up to a semi-smartphone. Because if you're in a part of the world where you're not going to be able to plug your phone in every 5 minutes to charge, you're not. I mean, we go into London and we do things. Carl always has to take a charger with him so we can all charge up our iPhones quarter of the way through the day, half the way through the day, and three quarters of the way through the day so we can keep talking to people. These people don't have that option. The most important thing is you've got a phone that actually has good reception and the battery lasts more than 5 minutes. That is far more important than being able to take a picture at 8 megapixels and being able to read your emails on top of the moon. So that's far more important to most people.
Your point is, Alex, know your customer.
Well, I think that's what Alex's budget. Point is go for the uprising market because it's the growth one.
And I like phone works yes. best in a riot.
The official phone of uprising of citizen uprisings.
Has everyone seen the Nokia 3210 that Jody Max has posted in the chat room? That's a capable machine. It's a 3210 with a video camera strapped to it, MP3 player strapped to it, a Bluetooth chip strapped to it, and a half a gig memory card strapped to it. That's a mean bit of kit, and it'll last all week.
I have to say, by the way, that if Nokia is the phone for uprisings, BlackBerry's the phone for riots.
And iPhones are the phone to video it on.
I thought we were going to spend a lot longer on this, but CES is coming up next week, 10th to the 16th. Anyone dribbling over this or kind of meh?
I've heard some downbeat reports about it.
You know what I heard they might have? 3D TVs. Helmet.
Oh, you think it's a 3D TV show?
I think they might have some 3D TVs. I've heard that such things exist and that they may be demonstrated for the first time ever at that show. Oh, no, wait. That was the last 5 or 6 years.
I want the game helmet. The game helmet.
That was there last year.
Put your eyes.
Well, Eric wore it.
Can't see
that was there last year, Steve.
Eric wore the duckbill platypus version of that last year, I think we recall.
But I was a fan.
I mean, normally it looks like that.
If that were affordable, I would absolutely buy that for like personal times, like when you're on an airplane and you just want to watch a movie yourself.
Dude, are you saying that when on an airplane, you would wear a hat that makes you look like a duckbill platypus with camo on it?
And he would walk off the plane with all his property nicked.
No, I thought we were talking about that one from Sony where it's like it's got like a fat giant visor on the
front
of your
face. That's the jobby, but that's you saw the prototype from what I remember, and we did find a picture of that from CES last year.
Oh, no, that's a different product. That's from just like a little independent inventor who made that, and I did wear that. That was at Macworld, though, but that works too. It's a long hat, and you just set your iPhone right here, and so you just look at it through like a
stereoscopic thing, yeah.
Yeah. All right. I like the Sony thing because it's the first truly 3D I've ever seen because it's one screen per eye. So and it looks like you're looking at a movie like a big screen movie from many feet away. So I'm a fan of the technology and the concept if they can get the price down.
Steve
got his hand
can I just
up.
Ask and chat room don't help on this one. Can I just ask
was it a test?
Panel, yes, just like the quiz. Can I just ask each of the panel to say how many people in the chat room and don't help chat room have brought a 3D TV. So don't give the answers yet, chat room. But James,
do you mean 3D ready or 3D TV with the glasses and all the features? Subscription.
How many people
I would say none.
Do you think?
No, it's my show. I was going to take none.
Oh. All right. I'm going to take one then.
Point one.
774,000. 926.
No, the people in the chat room. So we are the tech people. So you would have thought that this community that are now watching this
would buy a 3D TV.
Yeah. How many?
No responses yet. So let's rephrase the question. How many of you watching own a TV?
Joe says he's got 10 on his own.
Yeah.
Yes, Steve, you've got the same issue as me. You wear glasses and you'd need prescription 3D glasses.
Tech Candy says he's got 1,000 in his place.
I bet no one in the chat room has got a proper 3D TV.
I've got a 3D compatible Blu-ray player.
No one gives a toss about 3D apart from the movie industry because they think it stops piracy. That's the end of the conversation.
And it gets them to buy more. And it gets them to buy more, you know, buy new television sets after they've already bought their HD. And by the way, have you heard the latest on this? I didn't even know that this connection existed. Have you heard of MHL that now is going to supersede HDMI?
No.
Really?
MHL, Multimedia High Definition Link. It's basically the same kind of 6-pin interface, and actually one variant uses the same HDMI.
What is that, 4K or something?
Connector. I think it can go up to that, but the point is it's the equivalent of HDMI or DisplayPort or DVI, any of those, but it also provides power to a device that is plugged in. And the first I heard about this was Roku issued a press release this week about a new Roku, not a box, but a little, looks like a USB stick that they're saying that they're going to be able to plug into these new smart TVs. And that's Roku's. I think that's a good idea. Because, you know, one of the things that I saw last year at CES that I just thought was laughably stupid was the idea of these smart TVs. Samsung has their own platform. LG has their own platform. You know, this time last year, Google TV was still a viable platform and alternative. So they're all trying to do these different things. And obviously, it seems painfully obvious to me that the whole point is to get people to buy more television sets because you're going to upgrade that software way faster than the 10-year cycle, the 6 to 10-year cycle that most television sets go for. So Roku says $50, you buy the USB stick, you plug it in, it provides power over the thing. And what MHL also does is it provides sort of a plug-and-play universal language for the TV's own included remote control to control a MHL-connected device. So no more 10 remote controls. So interesting technology, but yet another thing that's going to make us replace the TVs that we just bought.
One problem with it is not 4K. I'm hoping all the TVs that are now coming out are 4K, and that only supports up to 1080p. I think 4K is something that we need to move to.
Why the hell do we need to move to 4K?
Because it's the next thing.
No, it's because it's bigger and you think your willy's longer as a result.
It is.
Yeah, most average size televisions won't 4K. You won't even notice it. Very quickly, by the way, I just anecdotally, after the New Year sales, two guys I've spoken to, two people, and this is remarkable, went to the Sony store in these places and they tried 3D TV and were really impressed with it. Whether that actually leads to a purchase,
I don't
know.
I watched
it looks great on the demos that they set up for
it's
you.
Amazing whether they're watching sports.
I went down to Costco and they got the 3D specs on a pole stuck in front of a TV, and I watched someone doing like the speed skating, the short track speed skating, and it looked phenomenal. You got great depth of field and it looks superb, no question. But I ain't sitting with a pair of glasses on. No one else is sitting with a pair of glasses on. Less than 8% of people are going to watch 3D movies at the cinema. It's a dead donkey.
Would you know what I equate it to? I equate it to when I spent all that money on my digital theatre system, surround sound, 7.1, super duper subwoofer, beautiful speakers, the whole damn thing. And I took it out of the way because I just got fed up with the wires, I got fed up with the boxes, and I must have turned it on about once every 6 months.
It's
a complete waste of time.
Go back to Nintendo 3DS, 4 million units in 12 months.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and my kids turn off the 3D because they don't like it.
No, it gives them a headache.
Gives them a headache.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Go on, Eric. Go on. Go on. Go on.
You're going to change topics. I'm sorry. I agree with you guys in the chat room and on the panel here who have said 4K is much better than 3D. It's a much, if you have to pick one technology to throw twice the resolution at, I would absolutely pick 4K over 3D 2K. It's really that much better. And I think that's one of the reasons that Nintendo only achieved the 4 million sales of the 3DS after, I think it's like now almost half the price of what it initially came out as. And I think they should have used that additional hardware power and resolution, not to make double of the same stereoscopic image, but a single higher resolution one. Because I've never used the 3DS, but from the screenshots I've seen, they're still rather pixelated and low resolution, you know, geometry, graphics.
The problem with twice the resolution, though, is you've got to go for four times the graphics. When you've got stereoscopic pictures, you only have to go double the graphics. Nintendo have never been very good at graphics grunt, so I think it was probably a saving for them.
Yeah, but also remember, Nintendo specialise in making things that look like crappy cartoons. You know, it's not like they're going for the PS3 super-duper reality market, is it?
Said the voice of the market at 44 years of age.
DT90 asks, can Sarah explain how 4K works?
It's where they cheat, because before they used to use the vertical pixels, but now to make it look bigger, they use the horizontal pixels. There you go. Yeah. It's a cheat, nothing more. Have we got any cool thingies? James?
I do. It doesn't happen very often, but one of my mates has made an iPhone game, and I thought I'd pimp it on the show.
Oh, no question.
Oh, I saw your email exchange about this.
It's called Tiny Places, and my mate Paul Hutchinson, who used to develop for Sega, and he used to work for Micropro, so he's been developing games since I was a boy. And it's called Tiny Places, and it's very much in the same sort of thing as Cut the Rope and these ones where you sort of ping things up and down. There's a free version for you to try. I've put a link in the chat room to the paid version, but I've downloaded it. I played it for 20 minutes today, and it's really good fun. I literally only downloaded it today because I forgot. But that's the kind of mate I am. But it's a really good, compelling game. As good as Angry Birds, it just doesn't have the sort of following just yet. Good fun. It's
just
called Tiny Places.
That will change. Is it the one with the blue frog?
That's right, yeah.
This dude.
Hang on a second, let me just look at the
with a fishy type thing.
Yeah.
Jolly good. Excellent. Well done. Was he say Paul?
My mate Paul, yep.
Well done, Paul. Fantastic job. We will push it as much as we can. You should have sent me a press release, though, because I put it in the daily
99
show.
99 cents, usual 69p, and there's a free version.
Excellent. Jolly good. Great pick, mate. Always look after mates. Steve, what have you got for us, pal?
I've got lots of things, but I'm going to choose one thing. This.
That's a shuffle. An iPod?
That's an iPod shuffle.
Yeah.
That's how big that is. That is a CD. I'm just helping you out with the size here.
Have you got a filing cabinet you're about to produce and show how many documents there's a stack behind you?
Is that your recovery CD?
Yes, that's my CD I got.
It's his pirated Windows recovery CD.
This is my little Monster Bluetooth speaker. Now, this is a Monster Clarity HD Bluetooth speaker. And basically, this thing is tiny. It's the size of my packet of buttons, basically. But the volume that this thing kicks out is amazing. I'm going to do a video for you to demonstrate. And I hate videos of audio products, but I just want to show this off so much. And this is Bluetooth.
Is it the video of your mum going, "That's too loud"?
It is. We had a whole party at New Year, and everyone thought I had some huge machine going on, but this was filling the whole room.
Impressive.
It was £79 from Amazon. It's a Bluetooth speaker, so it connects wirelessly or through Bluetooth to any of the normal smartphones that you have. I like this bit, though. This is the designed for BlackBerry version, not the designed for iPhone version. Do you know why it's designed for BlackBerry?
Because it's got a connector?
Because it's black.
Okay.
The other one's exactly the same, white. But it's silver. But the black version looks great. But it's powered, rechargeable, easy connecting. It's got some buttons on the side, so you can also answer phones on it. It's got a microphone in it, so you can also use the phone.
Was that your urban speak? It's got a microphone in it.
In it, like in it.
In it, yeah.
But it's rocking. It's brilliant.
Very good, mate. Thank you very much. Excellent. Sarah, what have you got for us, mate?
I've got this thing called the Nokia 3310.
Oh, you haven't got one again.
I have, look. I'm only teasing. That's not really my
I've got a 95. Does that help?
Oh, a 95 quality phone.
I thought I had one in the cupboard, actually. No, my cool thingy is this thing called Ice Cream Sandwich on the Nexus S.
Oh,
it's absolutely cool. I love it to bits. It's such a difference. I know that a lot of people have been saying that, particularly on the Galaxy Nexus, there's an issue with various issues that people didn't like because of the soft buttons and things like that. But I have to say, on the Nexus S, and I know that there's also been some issues that Google have paused the release of it, apparently, but I've actually not had any problems at all, and I absolutely love it. So that's my cool thingy.
Well done. Jolly good pick. Eric, what have you got for us?
I have something to mention. It's not really a cool thing, but maybe if you're very rich, it would be. I was trying to look up. I keep looking. This is almost a plea for if anyone knows how to a solution for this. I would kill someone, physically choke someone, strangle the life out of someone, if I could obtain, by doing that, a dictionary plugin to use a full unabridged dictionary inside Apple's little dictionary provided app, where you can just right click on any word. I do this all the time. I've learned so many words and you know, improve my knowledge of words because this, just right click on anything, say look it up. I look it up. But often, you know, it's an abridged dictionary. I would love to learn the etymology of the words, the origin, yeah, what it means, the root word and stuff like that. Some expressions, I love to know where they come from. I'm interested in that kind of thing. And the dictionary and Wikipedia have spoiled me in that regard. There's still a lot I can't get access to. I wish there was an unabridged plugin. So I went searching and I found the only real unabridged dictionary I would ever consider seems to be, or anyone would, seems to be the Oxford English Dictionary, that it's like, you know, the definitive source for the English language. I looked it up. I thought, well, can I buy it on a CD-ROM? I used to remember seeing these in stores for like $50. You get the unabridged Webster's or something. You can't buy the CD-ROMs anymore. They're off the market, apparently. The most recent ones I've seen on Amazon are like from 2002. And of course, the English language is completely different since then. But no, it's probably for like OS 9 or something. I don't know, Windows XP. But guess how much? So they've gone to a subscription model, and guess how much the yearly subscription is for a single person, not an institution, not a business, for one person's access to the Oxford Unabridged Dictionary. Guess how much per year?
Oh, it's probably £180 or something. It's ridiculous.
$300 per person per year to look up words.
Yeah.
Is that not insane? I looked on Amazon. You can buy the 12-volume set of thousands and thousands of printed pages for like $300. Why do they think someone would pay, an individual would pay, to buy a new unabridged dictionary set every year? How could they charge the equivalent of like that? Doesn't that seem insane?
Yes, absolutely. Not going to hear any arguments here. I was going to say, I'm just sitting trying to go through that whole conversation in my mind and realize whether you actually picked anything at all.
No, I didn't.
Right, okay,
nothing.
Thanks, mate. Alex.
Can I just ask for a digression, very brief one. Did you see the story in the Register I put in the chat room that the iPad typos, somebody has slowed down them typing and the iPad gets it wrong more often than they do?
Oh, right.
That it's miskeying and therefore it's getting the words wrong because the iPad is miskeying it, not because you're typing it badly.
I'll have a look at that afterwards.
It's bloody ridiculous. But yes, you're absolutely right. Not enough proper English, not enough dictionaries in the world. I won't have any of these three-letter acronyms either. Thank you very much.
Nice to know you're paying attention, James. Alex, what have you got for us, mate?
Right. Well, as anyone in the chat room already knows, I'm really up on this game called Tension.
Oh, that's a great game.
I can't believe anyone would guess that. So I thought I'd talk about that for a little while. But
that's a great game. We played that on New Year.
Did you really?
No.
How did you find it?
We did. It's a brilliant game. Is that the iPhone game?
Yeah, I'd say that. Yeah, I think it's the iPhone game developer Jonathan Church.
Oh, it's free, isn't it? Basically,
yeah, and it's free.
It asks you to...
Wow, what a memory you've got, Alex.
Is that the one that replaces Trivial Pursuit?
Yeah, and you well, I'll explain it. Oh, actually, if you've played it, you better explain it.
Oh, go on then. It's a game that we happen to play at New Year, actually, and it basically says, right, you've got 30 seconds and you've got to name 10 ales, and then you, as the person filling it out, you says, yes, they've got that one, they've got that one, they've got that one, and it's really good, and it remembered all of the questions that we'd already asked through the New Year period. Really good party game, replaced the board game for us, was interactive. We felt like we were on a proper quiz show because it had the noise, it had the sound. It was brilliant. Really good party game, and it's completely free.
Is it mead sensitive?
No. It survived the drunkenness as well. The iPad was being thrown around the room as we passed it around each other. Boys versus girls, completely free. Is that the one you meant, Alex?
Yeah, I think that possibly is, yeah. Or if you've got $6,000, I'd buy the new Nikon D4.
Okay.
That meant Alex didn't have one either.
So, of course I did.
Loosely translated. My pick is something that I spent a lot of time playing with today, and more time than I should have. If you go to notlion.github.com, you can play with their Street Viewer to Small Planet Converter. It's a web application. And basically, Small Planet, you see it on some of the adverts over here for British Gas, is that, you know, you take your entire street and turn it into a circle, and you get some great pictures. This is my parents' road. There we go. It looks rather nice. This is my road. No, it's not. That's not my road at all. That's my road. There we go. And you can take, basically, you just position the marker over anywhere on Google Images, or Google Maps, rather, and it'll convert it. You can do a mole's eye view as well, so as opposed to a sky view. And I went around and just placed the cursor at various points across the globe this afternoon, and that's the view of the London Eye from a nearby street, and it looks absolutely brilliant. That's a view from just a random street in the middle of New York. That's the view from the pedestrian walkway on the Brooklyn Bridge. And that's the view from somewhere near Archway.
Oh,
wow.
I think. Well, not Archway. And look, you can see... It's Admiralty Arch, that's it.
Oh.
Wow. And look, you can see Super Mario running around the little planet and then jump into the, across to the next one.
I thought it was so cool. I sat and played with it today loads. And it is great. I mean, you need to sit and mess with the position.
Doesn't it remind you of the little planets on Mario Galaxy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But any position that you've got at all you've got to do is set the cursor on this application and it will take you to it. And it does a split-pane view. And on the right-hand side, you've got Google Maps. And on the left-hand side, you've got the view that you've got, so of your little small planet. If you want to change it, all you do is move the cursor up and down your street and you can get better and more robust views. And Alex, this was the question that we got today on the photo show about wide-angle lenses.
Yeah, it's funny, I was thinking about that as you were talking.
And that's what I was saying, you know, fill the center of the image or fill the edge of the image, but fill one or the other. And this thing does a great job with it. And where you've got trees, things that stick up quite high, trees, telegraph poles, that kind of stuff, street lamps, it brings it to life. Yeah, Carl Madden would make a big difference. Absolutely. There we go. This podcast and many others on the network, all of the others on the network, wouldn't be possible without UK2. We're having a chat with them next week about what we're going to do for the year going forward. I really hope they're not going to drop us. I don't think they are. You guys have been buying their service. Thank you ever so much for supporting us by supporting them. Go to bageltechnews.com, click on their logo. Even if you just want to sign into your account, go straight through to it and sign in, and they'll know that you're a returning customer. And if you want to buy any service, check out their prices. They've got tons of stuff, really, really good value for money. And use the offer code BAGELTECH, you get 15% off, and use the offer code BAGELDNS if you're transferring in a domain, then they will remove the charge for that, as well as you can use both offer codes. So please make sure you use the codes, and please make sure you click the link. Whatever you're doing right this second, just stop and go and click the link, because it's absolutely superb. Thanks to UK2 for supporting us. We'd be off the air without them. We really would. The other thing that we've got coming up as well is, if some of you watched the photo show just before Christmas, we had a lady on named Missy Mwak, who's a photography mom, and she was a bit of a hit on the network. There's quite a few people have written in emails and commented on tweets. She's got her own show, and she's recorded the first episode this evening. She is going to be the tech girl. She's going to give you Agony Aunt, which I'm reliably formed in the States is Uncle Bob's. Is that right? Like a Uncle Bob's? An Uncle Bob? Something like that.
What?
An Agony Aunt. She's you're writing, Dear Agony Aunt, I'm struggling, it's my boyfriend's cheating on me, what should I do? She's going to be your tech Agony Aunt. All you've got to do is send an email.
Agony.
Yeah. Is send an email.
I'm so lost.
Okay.
Dear Missy, I've lost my installation disk. What should I do?
What should I do? There we go. And she will answer your question. Send your emails to bageltechmissy@gmail.com, and she will be the tech agony aunt of the network from us this point going forwards. Her new show should be up over the weekend. There you go. I hope you'll enjoy it, because I think it will be quite enjoyable. Thank you. Where can we get a hold of you, James?
Sorry, I was just clicking on the uk2.net link on the bageltechnews.com site.
I did say do it. Well done, mate, for doing it right now, right here.
I hear they have affordable hosting for everyone.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Play with the little sliders. Great fun. SYZYGY on Twitter, Syzygy. That's me.
Thanks, mate. Steve, where can we get you, mate?
Monday, you can get me at the Wood Pub on the 9th of January.
Sat on a tin of Tennant's Super drinking 20 tabs.
Very special night that I can't tell anyone about, but don't bring your wallet.
Yeah, you've got
your
L Mug meeting with free beer and food.
Yeah. So that's on Monday.
Members
night.
Only.
I don't tell anyone. And then we have the photo walk with yourselves,
yes.
Bagel Tech, on Saturday, the 14th of January in London Town, starting at London Borough Market.
in the afternoon, and details of all of those events are on the LMUG and Photo Bagel Tech websites, of course, and Clubhead on Clubhead HQ on Twitter.
Yeah, you can. It's 1 p.m. meet in the Meat Packers Pub or the Meat Porters Pub. Is it something like that?
Yeah.
At Borough Market.
Yeah, in Borough Market. Just next to
if you can get to London on Saturday for 1 o'clock, get yourself there with your camera and we'll be walking around. And me and Alex will be sitting watching everyone and drinking.
But it's
right?
You don't have to be a professional person in any way, shape, or type or form. People turned up with no cameras last time, didn't they, Alex?
Yeah, me.
And
I'm bringing a bag full of lenses.
It's all good fun, and people turned up with iPhones, people turned up with point and shoots. It's all about the community. It's all about meeting people and having a good time.
And I'd say every single person left with a picture that they were really happy with.
Yeah, really good pictures taken by everybody. And Alex and did an amazing job of just helping everyone out as well. So
yeah, I held that.
It's all about drinking, don't lie.
Be a good day.
Sarah, where can we get you, mate?
You can get me on the Twitters at SarahJaneUK.
Cyberpool says he'll take a jar of fish eyes. Eric, where can we get you, mate?
The chat room is trying to help me out by saying that Agony Ant equals Uncle Bob, and I don't know either of those references. I've clearly got some Wikipedia-ing to do, but you can find me at ericlanigan.com and twitter.com/ericlanigan, E-R-I-K-L-A-N-I-G-A-N.
Have you seen the film Dan in Real Life?
No.
Okay, well, that's an Agony Ant, but never mind.
Yes,
it doesn't matter either, then. Dude, I know you're only 24, but
Ewan?
Yes.
Are you going to do your cool thingy?
I did it.
God, I don't believe it.
That was that worldly thing, the roundy, squishy fisheye thing.
Sorry you weren't listening, Sarah.
Oh, well, sorry.
That's her way of saying she didn't think it was very cool.
Yeah, okay. I'm crap.
No more drinking on podcast.
I tell you what.
Yeah, obviously that's what did it.
Aren't you going to do your cool pick, Ewan? You haven't shown us anything yet.
You showed us nothing insightful or nice. I've got to say, if you want a string of crap cool thingies, listen to the Mac show from this afternoon. Holy hell. Don started with a decent one and I finished with a half decent one and the rest in between were just turgid. Sorry, Andy.
It's no good just after Christmas as well.
Oh, no, that's no defence for the crap that was poured out this afternoon.
Should all have good stuff after Christmas.
Absolutely. Alex.
What?
G-Man, where can we get you, pal?
Alex G. Fox on Twitter.
Thanks, mate.
It's late.
Not doer at all. We'll be back again next week with the big show. We've got all the coverage from CES. The Daily Show will be running Monday, Wednesday and Friday with all the news, unless there's too much of it, and I might try and shove an extra one in if I possibly can. And then we'll have a big show back next Thursday, not Friday, because Sarah says. And we'll have the photo show at 2 o'clock on Friday and the Mac show at 3:30 on Friday. Have a great week. Thanks ever so much for listening. See you soon.